Good morning. We have Dr. Quincy Gurirab in the studio with us again today. Welcome, Dr. Quincy.
Good morning and thank you.
The topic that we have today, I actually just want to spit it out of my mouth, is COVID. Mm-hmm. I know that the entire world is so COVID fatigued, but we just wanted to talk about whether, where is it at? You know, where are we at with it? It used to be something that induced very high levels of anxiety and fear in a large part of the world. So it sort of disappeared in Namibia, and then it sort of came back again. So, you know, really just like, where are we at with COVID?
I think the answer is a difficult one, but I'll do my best to say where we are. So I think where we are at the moment is that, luckily for us, one of the strengths and the weaknesses of this coronavirus is that it mutates very quickly. Mm-hmm. And it mutates in response to its environment. It also mutates automatically based on the number of mutations or multiplication that it undergoes. And during that process of mutation, a virus can either make itself better or it can make itself worse. And the point where we are now is that the latest variants that we've seen going around the world of COVID have been infectious, very similar in rate to the previous ones, but it has not been as virulent. Okay. And what I mean by that is not as many patients have developed severe COVID, ending up in hospital requiring oxygen and requiring specialized therapy. So that's the advantage of where we are now with the latest mutations and where we are with COVID. Should we continue to be worried? I think we shouldn't be worried, but we should continue to be vigilant. Mm-hmm. We should still make sure we wash our hands, we live hygienic lives, and then wherever we can or we feel necessary is to use protective. So if you feel uncomfortable in a certain environment, there's nothing wrong with protecting yourself and wearing gloves or wearing a mask. I mean, it's not generally advised in public places, but if you want to make yourself feel a bit more relaxed and calm, you can do those things. That takes away the anxiety, because the biggest problem with COVID is always the anxiety.
Okay. I think actually a number of people probably have a form of PTSD in response to COVID because of the massive impact it had. So even if there wasn't necessarily a family member, a close family member who passed away, it was just the utter disruption as well as the devastation in communities that the initial, especially second and third waves, wrought havoc through.
I think absolutely. You're so right, Colleen. If we just think about how many people lost their jobs, how many companies had to close down, how many families lost breadwinners, how many children lost parents.
Yes.
So there's an entire side to it, other than just losing your immediate family or having demise to COVID. It's the social effect that it has on everybody and the reminders of it that we see in the community on a daily basis.
Yes, you know? And I think it's still a raw area in many people's lives, and triggering, for example, if they have to, you know, visit the hospital for another reason, then it's like just bringing back all those, that unpleasantness from that previous experience.
True.
And then, Dr. Quincy, in terms of things like loss of taste and smell, we do hear reports of people saying they still can't taste, you know, like the way that they used to. And, you know, they had COVID like 18 months ago.
Yeah.
What do we see in terms of that?
So what you're referring to, Colleen, in short, is what they call the long COVID syndrome. All right. So now, initially, people thought that long COVID just refers to the effect that it had on your lungs and your functionality. However, we now know that COVID isn't just a pulmonary problem. Mm. COVID actually infects the entire body.
Yes.
You get infections in various parts of your brain. You can get infections in your heart. You can get infections in your kidney. You can get infections in endothelium. And all these have led to long-term effects that have actually been quite measurable.
Mm-hmm.
And the studies on these long-term effects of COVID are still ongoing.
Yes.
A lot of people reporting that they have memory related issues, which has been well documented in the literature as well, that there is definitely a relationship between having had severe COVID and ending up with a cognitive type of decline. Nobody really becomes impaired unless they've had severe stroke or some complication, but just the infection itself has shown that people on their scores, for example, in general, their cognitive ability scores have scored slightly lower than they did before. There haven't been population-based studies in order to really see if there's a big difference, but on smaller community-based studies, there have been some signals that there has been a lasting effect.
Okay. Yeah, so we actually then maybe don't know the full extent of the effects at this point in time, because I think there's, because you, like you mentioned, it could affect the heart as well as the lungs and the brain and then the endothelium, which is the inside lining of the blood vessels. So we might actually not be fully aware of all of the long-term consequences of having had a COVID infection.
Absolutely. I think that is where we are with that. And the research is ongoing. And I think we will have a good understanding of the long-term effects of COVID pretty soon.
And then, Dr. Quincy, what about the vaccines? So you know as well that the vaccines to do or not to do, which one, it actually also caused divisions amongst families, divisions amongst communities, really a huge furore around that. Has there been any evidence coming out that the people who did take a vaccine are impaired or having a long-term physical consequence that was maybe not known at the time?
Very contentious and difficult to answer question. And I think the evidence speaks for itself in the sense that if we look at the literature, if we look at the trials that were done and the ongoing trials regarding that exact question, it clearly shows that the long-term outcomes of vaccinated patients have been much better than the unvaccinated patients in that group of they got infected with COVID, whether they were vaccinated or not vaccinated into those two groups. So there's still a lot of work being done, but a lot of the preliminary results are clearly showing that the outcomes are better for patients who have been vaccinated. I think at the end of the day, it still remains an individual decision whether somebody should have the vaccination or not. In my practice, I advocate for vaccination. So those patients who have not had them, I would advise them to get them just because purely because the evidence speaks for itself at this point in time.
And so that's also then crucial for the patients who have comorbidities. So if you already have something which is affecting the inside lining of your blood vessels, for example, like diabetes or hypertension, then your outcome, if you were to contract COVID, could be improved if you had been vaccinated.
So if we look at the recovery trial and the follow-ups on it, you'll see that there's a lot of information reporting exactly on that. And then they have a list of risk factors. And I think the WHO makes use of those, that list from the recovery trial of risk factors that are associated with not just having more severe COVID, but also having more complications related to a COVID infection. And those include the risk factors like diabetes, being overweight, having hypertension, being a smoker, having emphysema or COPD. Interestingly, there's been no association between COVID and asthma, which has been a good thing. All the studies have shown that there was no increased death rate or morbidity associated with having both asthma and COVID.
Okay, so that may also be related then to that propensity of the coronavirus to attack the endothelial lining of the blood vessels as opposed to the small pipes or airways that supply the lungs.
Correct.
So we know that it is very much a very personal choice, and it's important for people to have peace about their choices. Then important also for individuals to have a discussion with an accredited healthcare provider about their individual circumstances and their medical history to make this decision.
I think maybe, Colleen, just as a last point, one of the important things we could touch on quickly is related to COVID treatment. So, mm-hmm. so one of the great advances that we have had is the additional options on treatment. So, as you might know, initially the mainstay of therapy was intravenous steroids in the mm-hmm. form of dexamethasone mm-hmm. in conjunction with remdesivir when it was available. Mm-hmm. What we've also now had is some new antiretroviral medications that have been developed that can actually be taken in a tablet form. Okay. Which is not available in Southern Africa quite yet,
okay.
But it might be available in future. That's a 5 to 10 day course, depending on which of the antiretrovirals are taken. Antiviral medications are taken with actually very good outcome for both inpatients as well as outpatients.
Okay. So and these are also potentially usable in the future were there to be a different kind of virus which went on a devastating mutation spree.
Correct. Correct. Then there's some more advanced medications that have also been studied, one of them being a medication called tocilizumab and the other one being baricitinib. These are all what we call biological type therapies. So these therapies actually work on immune system mm-hmm. and try to suppress that immune storm, as they used mm-hmm. to call it, mm-hmm. or cytokine storm, so that the effect of that on your body is less and causes less damage as the virus moves through your system and essentially eradicates itself.
Okay. Yeah. Great. Well, thank you very much, Dr. Quincy, for joining us this morning on this very controversial topic. And we will speak again.
Thank you very much for having me.